Hello, everybody. We got to do it first. We got to start. Come on. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a mental health check-in masquerading as a movie podcast.
Yeah.
You know, two broken brain boys just using film to laugh at stuff.
You are a shambles without this fucking, without the pre-prod.
Do you know what it is, mate? I'm just buzzing for this episode. I'm buzzing. Okay. But all before right. we get to what we're doing, how are you doing, Ben?
I'm having chest pains again, man.
Don't bring that up because that's serious. And bitch, don't kill my vibe.
No, it's not. it's not as bad as before. But now it's like weird little stabby pains. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So you went to the GP
for the first lot, right? Remember a couple months back when I was
outlived it because I'm strong.
Okay. Yeah. Great.
No, I'm terrified of doctors, so I didn't go.
Yeah.
And now I won't go again, but that's how I am. I'm doing good.
Okay.
Well, other than that, I'm fucking great, man, to be honest. Right. Really good.
Fantastic.
Really good. How are you?
I'm giddy. So,
good.
For those of you tuning in for the first time, Ben and I normally do quite a relatively structured show where, you know, we'll watch a film a couple times, we'll write some little headlines of notes, we'll both think about what we want to say, we'll have some informed insight, you know, and it'll be like a well-produced show.
Yeah.
There'll be segments, there'll be whole bunches of stuff. This, I've literally finished watching The Crow remake 35 minutes ago.
Yeah, I feel bad for you, bud. I feel bad for you, man.
No, because here's what we're going to do. We've put as much preparation and production and planning and forethought into this episode as the makers of The Crow remake have.
Yeah.
It's a meta episode, buddy, and I am buzzing.
Welcome to the meta episode where there's no plan. This is just got notes. We've got a breakdown.
This is perfect for this film.
I've written a breakdown.
Yeah.
I've put very little effort into it because I feel like as I was writing it, I was just getting like, what's the point?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I was mirroring the film. What's the point?
Ben, I can see here there's three paragraphs.
Yeah.
And I think that is more writing than there is in the film. And I also would have gone, Do you know what? Why am I putting more effort than the 17 executive producers
That's exactly it.
As the opening credits were playing, I was like, there's a lot of chefs working on this soup.
Yeah.
There's like...
Yeah.
It just keeps going. Executive production. And then you go, okay, executive production. And then another phrase, executive production. Mm-hmm. So let's see what one of these executive producers managed to write for a breakdown, shall we, Ben?
Yeah, let's jump in, man. Let's jump in.
We're having a breakdown.
Right. So. Fuck's sake. All right.
I'm living the dream right now.
Part one, tragic beginnings.
Ooh.
The story opens with Eric Draven, played by Bill Skarsgård, and his girlfriend Shelley, FKA Twigs, trying to rebuild their lives after meeting in a rehab center. Shelley is haunted by a video that shows her being forced to commit murder under the influence of Vincent Rogue, a possessed by the devil yet void of any personality crime lord. Their newfound happiness is short-lived as Rogue's men track them down, leading to their brutal murders.
Ben, how is this The Crow?
We lost top dollar for this old man who's like, I live long and I whisper.
And
fuck
in case you,
man.
Don't know, he's a bad guy. His surname is Rogue, but they've spelt it weird.
Yeah.
Part two, resurrection and vengeance. After their deaths, Eric is resurrected by a supernatural entity named Kronos. Is he?
Yeah.
Ben, I've literally just come out of this film. He doesn't say his name once.
No one says his name once. I had to research it. It was pissing me off. Dude, it's stupid. It gets worse. Continue. Come on.
Guided by this spirit, Eric is granted powers of invulnerability to seek revenge against Rogue and his men. These powers remain with him as long as his love for Shelley remains true.
Stupid.
However, as Eric uncovers more about Shelley's involvement in the murder, he momentarily loses his powers.
Fuck's sake.
But then strikes a deal with Kronos, who you have to find out his name on the internet,
Google,
to sacrifice his soul in exchange for Shelley's resurrection. regaining his abilities to complete his mission.
Part three.
That sigh in your face.
The final confrontation. Eric embarks on a bloody path of revenge, ultimately confronting Rogue in an opera house. Mm. Despite Rogue's attempt to overpower him with his demonic whispers, Eric's love for Shelley allows him to triumph. He drags Rogue into the afterlife, where Rogue is condemned to eternal hell. It sounds dope as fuck, but it's piss weak.
It's really poor. Yeah.
In the film's disappointing conclusion, Shelley is resurrected, but Eric's human form perishes, leaving him content in the afterlife, hopeful that their souls will one day reunite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Ben, before we get into the meat of the film we've got, right?
Yeah.
I would very much like to just do a quick recap.
Sure.
Of what happened since this film was announced in 2009.
Okay. Yeah, hit me with it.
So, Stephen Norrington was attached in 2009 with Mark Wahlberg starring.
Yes.
But by 2011, they scrapped that. They had Juan Carlos Fresnadillo directing with Bradley Cooper starring. But that was only for the first half of 2011 because by mid-2011, Bradley Cooper had dropped out.
Smart.
And Channing Tatum and Ryan Gosling or James McAvoy were all rumoured.
Wow.
But fuck those rumours, because by 2012, it was Francisco Javier Gutierrez directing with Tom Hiddleston starring. But Hiddleston drops out in 2013. Alexander Skarsgård was rumoured.
Sure.
But actually, Luke Evans got cast. So in 2015, Corin Hardy was directing with Jack Huston starring. But that was only for the first half of 2015, because Jack Huston dropped out.
Right. Got you.
Nicholas Holt and Jack O'Connell were then rumoured.
Oh, God.
Corin Hardy's still directing, but now it's Jason Momoa.
Right.
And it's called The Crow Reborn.
Incredible.
But that gets cancelled in 2016. So now it's 2022. We've got Rupert Sanders directing and Bill Skarsgård starring.
Right.
So it's a really simple how we got here.
100%. So you remember last week when we did the Curse of the Crow? And it's like all the horrible shit happened on the right film. And now it's like the not so horrible shit has been gifted to the wrong film. It's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a hard way to phrase that. I feel like I might have worded it poorly, but my intention is correct. You know what I mean?
Having literally just come out of this film, I am very confused because it's...
Spoiler, buddy. It doesn't get easier with time. Nothing makes sense over time.
Right. It's not enough of a remake of The Crow to bother needing the title.
No, it's not. Exactly. It doesn't need The Crow in the fucking title. It could be called anything and everyone's like, oh, so, okay, that's fine.
My theory was, and again, this is all brand fresh, he's kind of a street rat, right?
Yeah.
He's a bit grey morally.
Yeah.
They could call it The Pigeon.
Ooh, that could be quite good.
And then it could just be a pigeon that brings him back. Yeah. And the whole thing could be like FKA Twigs. He's trying to make a nest.
Ooh, okay.
Right? She's his nest.
I don't think pigeons make nests out of twigs, if I'm honest with you, mate.
Oh, mate, I've seen some photos of pigeons. They are the shittest nest builders.
That's what I mean.
In nature.
Yeah, I don't think they use proper building materials. I think it's mainly like crisp packets and homeless tears.
And R&B singers.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's just crisp packets and bucktooth R&B singers.
Yeah, essentially. I came out of this, I was very confused in the way where I was like, I get it was The Crow.
Mm.
And I get the characters were the same. But I felt like as a sober man, my main takeaway was, fuck rehab, let's run away and do a bunch of drugs. And I was like, 5 years ago, fuck yeah, I'm in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Teenage Ben would have been like, yeah, man, these guys are so cool. Yeah, these guys are so cool.
But as an adult,
35-year-old me, I'm like,
right.
You need a book. You need to read.
That was my issue. So that I'm watching our new Eric Draven and our new Shelley.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at them going, these guys are fucking losers, huh?
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't hang out with these people.
Yeah, that's what it was. I was like, I don't care about these people. I don't want to be around them.
Because in the original, in 1994, Shelley owns her flat.
Yes.
And she's organized a homeowners association to protest against the terrible conditions. And Eric's in a quasi-successful rock band.
Yes.
And in the remake, they are both just drug addicts.
They're drug addicts in a rehab center that escape from a rehab center to go and do drugs. But also, in the original, they're engaged. They've been together for a long time. You get flashbacks to this very rich, very full of love history.
Committed relationship.
A committed relationship. You can feel the love dripping from this. The chemistry is immense. In this one, they meet, go, yeah, man, I'm into that.
It's a bender fling.
Yeah. It's a fucking, that's exactly what it is. It's a coke fling.
Yeah.
Mate.
How many of those have we had in our lives, Ben? I know for a fact, I would, if one of your coke flings died back in the
I've
day.
I've never had a coke fling.
You'd have called me up and we'd have been wrapping her up in a rug in 20 minutes and it would have been job done.
The only coke fling I've ever had is with cocaine, right? That's all the coke fling I've ever needed. I've been sort of like, ooh, hello. Fancy hanging out again?
So I think I understand what they were trying to do. I do. In the first movie, have you ever heard of the term fridging?
You've told me what fridging is before. It was a while ago. Was this when we were talking about Twilight?
No, that was soaking, and that's a soaking. Mormon thing.
Yeah, I got you. Okay,
fridging's
cool.
A different thing. Fridging is a sort of trope in storytelling where somebody is killed at the very start, and their only real purpose in the plot is to provide motivation for someone else. Right?
Oh, yeah. We had a big talk about this. Okay. Right.
So it's like Shelley in the first one has very little agency and autonomy or character arc. Shelley exists to provide the male character a reason to do stuff, right?
Yeah.
And it's a valid thing to criticize in today's storytelling. We've kind of moved forward a little bit, and I can see them wanting to build the character of Shelley to kind of show the romance, right? Not just flashback to it and do a promise you it was great.
I can
see them wanting to go, no, let's actually demonstrate that.
Yeah.
They then cast two people who have less chemistry than two inert gases.
Oh, God, it's painful, man. It's painful.
Like, Skarsgård's got more chemistry with his coat than he does with FKA Twigs.
Dude, he looks at that coat so fucking lovingly for a long amount of time. And I'm like, if you did that to your missus, I might buy into this. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, honestly, he's looking at that duster like he's about to rub one out on the duster. He's like you looking at a bowler hat. Do you know what I mean? He's all about it.
How dare
you.
It was a brief phase in uni, Ben. It was a brief phase. I tried it. Mm-hmm. I looked at myself in the mirror.
Loved
and then
it.
The bowler hat.
Carried on for about a year, then retired the bowler hat when people were like, that man is wearing a bowler hat. And you were like, oh my God, I'm that man.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Ben. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. I went through a flat cap phase.
You know what I mean?
You know this because you knocked one off my head whilst I was pissing into the urinal, laughed whilst I actively pissed on my flat cap and then left the room.
Yeah, I only went into the toilet to do that as well. That was,
yeah, I know.
That was the bit that I'd forgotten.
I know.
I forgot until you reminded me live on air that I walked into the gents, knocked your hat into the urinal, and then left again.
Yeah, but you tell it like it's a cheeky little thing. No, I was pissing. You knocked it into my active stream of piss.
I mean, come on, it's still
funny. What are we doing? What film is this?
This is possibly the most misjudged remake that I can think of. And the reason, as I was watching it, I realized the only people that were sat next to me, there was about four people in the same cinema screen as me.
Yeah, we had four people when we went to go watch it too.
Yeah, they were all my age. They were all kind of gothy.
Yeah.
And I was like, the only people that are going to be interested in this film are fans of the original.
Yeah.
But this isn't catered to towards the original.
No, it is not.
This is, let us take the original and not even ignore it. Let's actively pervert it into an inverse of what it was.
Let's pretend the original didn't exist and then just repackage it as something brand spanking new.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like re-editing Star Wars and releasing it as Star Wars and going, yeah, well, we kind of wanted to pretend the original didn't exist. So we made the original again, but worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like going to watch Top Gun. If someone's like, do you want to go watch Star Wars? And then they put on Top Gun Maverick. Like, it's the same film, it's just not Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But what if instead of fiancés, they were druggies on a bender?
Yeah, and what about instead of a long-lasting, relationship that spans years, how about they meet each other for 40 minutes and he decides to fuck up his entire life and run away?
What if instead of Eric Draven being the only supernatural element and the very real, very gritty crime world around him is forced to react to this sudden sudden explosion of the supernatural into their lives, confirming that not only is there is an afterlife, but that it is angry and coming to kill you.
Yeah.
What if they were all demons?
Yeah. So what about if not only are there now spirit guides, much like Derek Acora had, for our English fans. now, that joke is going to bomb in America. No one's going to fucking understand that at all. But please Google it. Just Google Derek Acora, most haunted, and just look up his spirit guide.
A northern man pretending to talk to someone who isn't
fucking
there.
Amazing. It was the best TV show ever. It was so good. rest in peace.
No, he's still there.
He's my spirit guide now.
Right, yeah, but other changes. Right,
there was tons of shit. I forgot what I was saying, if I'm honest. Derek Acora's story.
He always does. What if the first half of the movie is achingly slow and then cuts to hyper violence with people getting their heads samurai sworded in half?
I've got a theory on this.
Right. Okay.
I think what might have happened is there was like test screenings, and what they did is they were doing like they were measuring in amount of yawn per hour. So they would allow for like 6 yawns for the first half an hour, and as soon as they hit the 7th one, they're like, "Now we need to slap in some violence there." That's where we need to keep them on. They're about to leave. We need to keep them there on the promise of violence, and then it's another half an hour of fucking boring waffle that means nothing to anyone.
You see. That's a really good theory.
Yeah.
I think it implies more effort.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Is actually present. I think what actually happened is they got the writers together and the 19 executive producers, and they just went around the room and they were like, right, everybody just say an idea that you'd like to see in the Crow movie.
Yeah.
And they had a big whiteboard and they all wrote their stuff on the whiteboard. And then the writers sat there for another 9 months finessing that.
Yeah.
And then just as they were about to do the first draft, it was the release date. Someone had nicked the whiteboard and just shot whatever was on there.
1,000%. I'll buy into that one more than mine.
Because there's about 9 different genres in this film. None of which are connected. No. None of which complement one another.
But it also all of it calls to like new modern movies that are all also shit. Do you know what I mean? Like, for the bit after Rehab, like, so Rehab and the bit after Rehab, I was thinking, this just feels like I'm watching Bodies, 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 which if you haven't seen it, don't.
Ooh,
it's shocking. Don't bother with it. It's shit. If I went to cinema to it, I was like, I cannot believe I sat around for the end of this film. I've just wasted 2 hours of my life. And it also, if you do like Bodies, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. I felt like I was watching Bodies, Bodies, Bodies for the first bit, and then it kind of drifts into this weird fantasy, this weird dark fantasy, sort of like underworld-ish, but not quite underworldy.
Yeah, kind of like it's not horror, it's horror adjacent.
It is.
And therefore, it counts as scary because it's like Halloween scary.
It's
not
like
the film franchise, but like Walmart Halloween decorations.
Skeletons.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a bit like that, and then it goes like super fucking edgelord. Like,
ugh.
I know you cracked a joke. You were like, "Oh, you hate the whole edgelord stuff." I'm surprised you like the original Crow, and I'm like, "Yeah, because it's tongue in cheek. It knows what it is, and it's fucking leaning into it." Yeah, it's a fun romp. This removes all the fun element and is just sort of like, ugh. Goth dark, grim dark. I would die for you. You've known each other for a month. Shut the fuck up. Just shut up. You're all terrible people. All of you, your friends are terrible people. You're terrible people. I don't care about any of you. Please resign. And then you've got this sort of the end, which is like fucking Machete fucked Sin City. And it's this beautiful melge of like hyper violence and ridiculous scenarios with like, he walks into an opera house with a fucking katana and isn't stopped once. It's in America. There has got to be metal detectors everywhere. This prick doesn't walk into a fucking opera house with an unsheathed katana sword that is full of henchmen and a demon-possessed old bastard. There is not one fucking shot that he gets as far as he does. Anyway, Anyway.
It's not even that. It's the fact that there is about 40 goons firing guns at him.
Yeah.
And no one in the opera house goes, God, it's a bit noisy outside. Should we tell him to keep it down?
Oh my God, it's the loudest opera that exists, apparently. It's the loudest opera that exists. They're outside open curtains. They're not even fucking doors. The Phantom of the... Ba, 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 ba. I love this bit. When the drums kick in, really slaps. Yeah, great. Fantastic. What the fuck are we doing? Just, right, I check out of films the second the story doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to give this the benefit of the doubt for as long as I could. And bear in mind, the original Crow, 1994, is fresh in my mind. So I'm like, it's got a high peak to live up to. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Big set of shoes to fill. And I was giving it the benefit of the doubt, and I was holding out hope, and I was holding out hope. And honestly, like, we just sat there and were like, I've given up. I don't understand what this is. I don't understand what this is. I don't know which way it's trying to take me. It's trying to pull me in four different directions at once. Am I supposed to be sad? Am I supposed to be feeling like, oh my God, oh, their love is so intense. This is great. Am I supposed to be rooting for someone? Because if so, who? It's supposed to be like an anti-hero kind of noir revenge story, right? Where's the anti-hero? It's just Cox. Just Cox as far as the eye can see. It's just a fucking Bukkake video at this point. I'm like, I don't know which dick I'm supposed to be rooting for here. Like, fucking, just give me the cum shot. Let me go. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's an interesting relic of 2006. I think when we were growing up and I was having my bowler hat phase, right? It was that somebody came along and said, well, that Marilyn Manson's big and Slipknot's big, and there's like an emo scene.
Yeah.
Do you know what would make a bunch of money? There's a remake of The Crow, but like a big dollar version, like a top dollar version.
Like a top dollar version. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just got stuck in development hell because fundamentally, it's not a film you should remake. It was not only of its time, but it's the last film of Brandon Lee's life.
This is what died making. This is what I mean. This is my final point. I was saving this until the end because in all caps in my fucking notes, it is, this is the lifelong, it's the culmination of an actor's entire working life. And they're just like, nah, fuck it. Just, you know what I mean? Let's just chuck some out. And then they release this. And I'm like, it's the biggest fuck you I can think of. Shitting on his grave would be less offensive. Do you know what I mean?
So Alex Proyas, the director of the original 1994 Crow, has said that he's not gonna watch the remake because he thinks it's too disrespectful. But here's my point. Cool.
He doesn't know half the story, mate.
right. I think if they'd made this when you and I were young teenagers, going around Camden buying bowler hats, right?
Don't drag me into that shit. I never once had a bowler hat. You can fucking have your bowler hat phase. I hated you for that.
Yeah, okay, but you had your multicolored hair and your spiky... You had four spiky belts, Ben.
Dude,
I was... And your jeans were still around your knees.
It was bottom of my ass. And yeah, admittedly, right? I had crazy hair. Right. Listen, we hated each other for different reasons, right?
If they'd made a remake of The Crow back then, you'd have turned up and you'd have been like, yeah, this is sick.
Yeah, right? 100%. But so would
with
have you.
Samurai swords. Yeah, we both would have done.
Yeah.
But it spent so long in development hell, and Alex Proyas has the perfect quote here. He said, I thought the remake was a cynical cash grab. Not much cash to grab, it seems.
What a fucking lad. What a lad. Oh, I love him so much. I love him so much. Dude, talking on that, have you seen the figures?
No, tell me.
I'll give you the figures of today. Hold on. Sorry, I've just looked at the numbers again. It makes me so happy. It makes me so happy. So. So. You've just seen this film. What would you say the budget was?
Right, there's a fair bit of what I would say rushed CGI. There's a fair bit of practical effects.
Yeah.
And there's a fair bit of stunt casting. Like, Bill Skarsgård was kind of hot off the back of the It franchise. Yeah. So I'm going to say 30 mil, 40 mil.
All right, yeah, sound. Still a little south of the mark there, buddy. The budget on this alone was 50 million.
Oh,
50 million. And I'm going to give you two guesses onto where the box office numbers are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Worldwide. I want global. Worldwide box office number. Give me your best guess. Give me two of your best guesses.
It's been out a week.
It has been out 1 week. How much do you think it's made opening weekend and a full week?
Let's say 25 mil.
Okay. Well, give me your second guess.
15.
Okay. Wow, you are fucking generous. Okay. So on its opening...
Well, just because of the...
Okay, so on opening weekend,
mm-hmm.
it made 4.6 million. And that equates to 82% of the total amount of money that it has made to date.
No.
So far, it is standing at 5.6 million, which is 0.1 times the production budget.
Oh my God.
They literally,
oh my God,
can't shit the bed harder than that. Do you know what I mean? It's insane. It's fucking insane.
Oh my God.
So when I was doing a bit of research on this, right, I tried my hardest to research this film, and I was going back and forth, and there was debates online, and 99% of the things that I came across always ended up on Reddit, and it always ended up on being sort of like, how could we have let this happen?
Right.
Is the main takeaway, right? And it's understandable. And I get that people are going to like this, and that's fine. That's fine. You can enjoy this, and I'm glad that you enjoy this. But you're wrong. sorry. Yeah. But what I am going to do, right, is I'm going to defend right. this film, because it's doing its job to help round out a new subgenre. It's a very right. recent subgenre of horror that right. has come about, and it's called awful fucking remakes of classic films, and there is a lot of them, and I've done a bit of research into that instead, because that was way more fun than looking into this piece of shit, right?
Yeah.
So Friday the 13th,
yeah,
fantastic franchise, purely like it peaks and troughs, and then it fucking peaks right again with Jason X. You know what I mean? It goes full stupid. They remade it, disrespected everything about it, put it out. It was absolute dog water. Nightmare on Elm Street, classic, uh-huh. campy, fun horror franchise, implied pedophile, leaves it open to you. Do you know what I mean? It's very sort of like,
Come on.
It's
in the subtext.
It's in the subtext. They remade it out and out, said it, made it like a fucking, and took all the fucking fun and camp out of it and just made it like a weird.
Yeah, because
like,
it's a little bit difficult to sit there and go, oh, isn't he just one of those like villains you love to hate when he's actual pedo?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like
wear a t-shirt of him just being like, hey, Freddy.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. No one's walking around in a Nightmare on Elm Street remake shirt with Freddy's face on it, because you're actively supporting child molestation. But then that leads me into, you made a great point then. You can't make a pedophile a fun, love-to-hate right. villain. The same right, way exactly. that you can't make a dog killer a hero, like in Evil Dead, Fede.
Right,
the dog killer can never be the fucking hero. Another shitty horror remake. Wrong Turn. Shitty horror remake. Last House on the Left, shitty horror remake.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie, why did that need to get remade? No one fucking knows. House of Wax, glad it did though. No other film shows you Paris Hilton dying, I don't think. Haven't cared to look into it because it's shit. Hills Have Eyes, why the fuck was that remade? That was a perfect film. Hills Have Eyes was great. Why would they The Crazies, why remake that? Poltergeist. Yeah. Let's just remake.
Remake Poltergeist? What?
Yes. It's
when?
Shit. The Grudge. Shit. The Ring. Shit. Hellraiser. Aggressively mediocre. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Shut the fuck up. Old Boy. They Americanized Old Boy. That's not even a horror, but I'm still pissed about it. Dude, there are so many. I'm really trying. I'm actually dizzy. I've had to take my glasses off, man. I'm sweating, man. But honestly, it's a new genre that this is fucking added into, and The Crow sits in that genre beautifully, and it's not a genre that I enjoy, but it is a genre, and it's nice to see that the studios are going, what can we really invest into? Should we invest into new films and new ideas? And they're like, no, because it's a risk. Well, what can we lean into? How about this endless list of shitty remakes that are just cashing in on people's nostalgia? How about that? And everyone's like, yeah, fuck it.
I've got a grand point to some all of that up. That just strikes me, right?
Okay.
And top of my head stuff here, so bear with me. It's going to be messy. I'm going to have to edit the shit out of this. Make it make any sort of sense. But here's the thing. I think for the longest time, the thing that we're really struggling against is the amorality of capitalism. Capitalism doesn't care if the film is good or bad.
Yeah.
All it cares about is if you turn up, right?
Yeah.
So the shitty horror remake exploits a loophole in people turning up just to check it shit.
Mm-hmm.
I've just gone and given The Crow remake some box office figures so I can confirm what I already knew.
Yeah.
I knew it was going to be shit.
Yeah.
But I had to go just in case.
Yeah, I know. So I...
And it's this constant drive.
Yeah.
More profit.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's good. Doesn't matter if it's bad.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if this puts microplastics into the ocean. It's going to make us money.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if oil's burning the planet. It makes us money.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if The Crow remake just shits on the legacy of a man who died making this film.
Yep.
It's going to make some money.
Yep. Except for that one backfired a little bit though, didn't it? Kind of nice to see.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because for every one of The Crow remake, mm-hmm. there's going to be one that just makes a couple mil.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Do you know what? There's something to be applauded about The Crow remake.
Yeah. Let's
and
hear it.
It's nothing in the film. Trust me. There's nothing.
I was
going
to say, because I'm fucking drawing a blank on this one, mate. I was desperate to hear that one. I was like, I'm going to shoot the shit out of this one.
Professionalism.
Okay.
Professionalism.
Okay.
Every single person involved in the making of this film, the camera people, the sound editor, all the below the line crew, right?
Got you.
They turned up and the contract was, you're going to help us make this film and we're going to give you some money. And you're not going to walk off because you've agreed to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You're going to follow through with what you said you were going to do. Bill Skarsgård signed a deal and said, yep, I'll do this. Let's see how it turns out. And about 2 weeks into the process, I'm sure everybody knew. Everybody fucking knew what they were doing. But do you know what everyone did? They stayed professional. They stuck with it. And they turned up to work knowing that they were making a massive piece of shit, knowing that they were damaging their reputation. They went, do you know what? I said I'd do it, so I will. They followed through. And that is to be commended. Because if you're going to take a shit, you may as well stand next to it. And when someone goes, is that shit yours? Go, yeah, sorry, I did done goof.
Yeah, fair.
Right?
That's fair. I can applaud that. I think everyone involved in the film did a great job of what they had. It's just a shame that what they had was the equivalent of watching a homeless man sculpt a stray dog out of his own feces outside of a restaurant. You know what I mean?
So I have a question for you.
Go on.
Do you think we are reaching in film and in cinema the point where most of the approachable, enjoyable stories have been told so many times that we have to do remakes?
No.
No?
I truly don't. I think every day there are so many films out there, and I mean this sincerely, there are so many films out there with batshit insane storylines that I would in no universe have ever been able to conceive in my entire life. You could give me 10,000 lifetimes and there is not a timeline where I could conceive of some of the movies that are out there. I feel like the era that we're in at the moment in cinema, it's very much the home market's dead. Like physical media is dead. It's now down to collectors and nostalgia addicts. And it's a shame. But it's you know, money talks at the end of the day, and the home video market makes no fucking money anymore.
Fine.
We're in the streaming era, right? People want to sit in the living rooms. They want to pay a £9 a month subscription fee, and they want access to 100,000 films that they can never watch because it takes 2.5 hours to pick what fucking film to watch, right? That's the new entertainment, and that's fine. Like, I'm all right with it because I enjoy streaming services. I do it a lot myself. But without the physical sales, without the people going to the theater, without this and the other, the studios have to make, they have to take calculated risks.
They do.
And the calculated risks that they're looking at is what gets bums in seats, what gets people into the theatre.
What can we put as the title that means people will come just to check that it is shit?
Exactly. Yes. And I think the reason that we're here is it's our fault. It's our fault that we're here because we've bought into convenience over anything else, which is fine. Again, it's fine. It's going to happen. But all they're doing is they're looking at, we need people who grew up going to the theatre, the fresh popcorn smell, the excitement of sitting in a room full of strangers, not knowing what you're going to get, or sitting there for a great time. You know what I mean? Everyone having the same experience, coming out of it. It's similar to a concert, right?
Yeah, I get that.
No one knows anyone, but everyone is there for the same reason, and you're all of you together are united for a short period of time. And whether it's a good experience or a bad experience, you all have a takeaway from that that bonds you all in that moment. And I think that's a beautiful thing. The theatre does the same. Cinema does the same.
Yep.
And what they do is studios can look at the heyday, the cinema's heyday, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a time that's never going to come back. And if they do that, they're just going to make flops.
But this is the point, though. It is never going to come back. But you know what would come back? The people who miss going to watch Friday the 13th on the big screen. There isn't.
But that's the big problem. There isn't. There's not enough of us to support an industry anymore.
But there's more of us nostalgia fucking hounds. Desperate to get back in and relive the glory days. Yeah, because
and people who are willing to sit on their sofa and just watch any old shit for £9 a month.
Yeah.
Because here's my point. I don't, and here's why. Because I worked in an industry that was decimated by the streaming era. Mm-hmm. Because before I got into music, when I was a young lad full of piss and vinegar, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go work in the music industry. Mm-hmm. And the way I envisioned the music industry working was the way it had worked for the 20 years prior, right?
Yeah, definitely.
That a band would rent a studio for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah.
And for those 4 or 5 weeks, they would record the songs they'd written. Everyone would sort of pull together, create this bit of music, this sort of 45 minutes, labor over it, give it love. You'd just do it in that place, in that time, in that room, on that equipment with those people.
Yeah.
And at the end of the 4 weeks, you'd send it off to get mixed, off it would get mixed, and then it would go into the charts and sell.
Sure.
And it would make money and blah, blah, blah. I got into the industry and none of that was true anymore. It was people emailing each other files to be worked on laptops by themselves.
Yep.
They'd come in for 2 days, they'd record all the drums. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that was the money was gone because it used to be that you'd sell an album for 15 quid.
Yep.
And now what would happen is someone would buy it on iTunes, they'd buy the one song they liked, they'd buy the single for 65p.
Yeah.
And what it removed was the middle class. You could be an unsigned artist, and there's millions of them now on the internet. You can go on YouTube and you can find an artist who's making £2,000 a month, which is a sustainable income. You can be a musician earning £30,000 a year, right? Hmm. Or you can be Drake or Beyonce. What you can't be is an artist earning £100,000. And you need to be an artist earning £100,000 to have that creative freedom. Because an artist earning £30,000
goes,
I'm going to give them exactly what they want and not experiment because I can't fucking afford to.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's where I think cinema's heading.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly. So taking the music industry analogy there. Mm-hmm. So being as streaming is dead. Being a streaming is here and like the whole fucking, you know, home market's gone now.
Yeah.
How many last world tours have Kiss done? I went to their third final tour, right?
How many re-releases of classic movies are we going to get?
This
how
is
many
what
directors
I mean, though.
Cuts?
This is what I mean. It's nostalgia hounds that are funding Kiss because they're earning fuck all from streaming. They don't earn anything. So they have to do another last tour because they're like, fuck. Gene Simmons has got like, what, 105 illegitimate children that he's paying alimony for? Do you know what I mean? Child support's expensive when you're in your 80s. Do you know what I mean? He's got to jump out on stage into a fucking harness and be flung out across an audience. Dude, he's literally in his 80s. That's a broken pelvis.
He's going to snap.
That's what I mean. I think studios are at a point where they're like, right, streaming service, we put out the safe shit, we put out the same rom-com that we've seen 1,000 times, but with prettier people, newer actors, and we put them on Hawaii. Oh, this time we put them in Fiji, or this time it's at a wedding, or this time there's a bit of a time loop, and then that's their fucking bank. They earn the money there.
Yeah.
And then what they're doing with the cinema side of stuff is they're like, well, let's try and fucking, you know, back in the heyday, we had Alien, we had Friday the 13th, we had Evil Dead, we had the fucking Grudge coming over from Japan, we had Hills Have Eyes from the 70s, all this shit was coming out. Let's just fucking do that. Let's just do that because we'll get the fans of that franchise already in the theatre. We can bank on that fandom going, fuck yeah, man, more of what I love. Let's jump onto that fucking train. And then that's a great, it's a great investment because it's worked every time. I've seen 90% of that list that I said out loud in the cinema. I've seen.
Because you got a check.
Yeah, I've seen 90% of it though. Because when it was announced, I was like, oh, maybe. I do love
There's a
it.
Hope. There's
there
a
is.
Hope.
That's it. Yeah. It's nonsensical nostalgia fucking hounded, dude. We're all guilty of it. We are all guilty of it. It's insane.
Okay, but then if you look at what, if you look at the original films that are making money.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Denis Villeneuve, Christopher Nolan.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yorgos Lanthimos. Stuff like that. Stuff that gets bums in seats but is original storytelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Isn't revitalizing a franchise.
Yeah.
Are we just, I often wonder whether or not we're living in this place where we always feel like cinema was better just before we were able to experience it. Because if you look back at the cinema of the 70s, it's easy to see, oh, you got Francis Ford Coppola, you got Steven Spielberg, you got all this. We remember them because they were good. What we don't remember is the entire box office year that was full of Star Wars clones and like that.
Yeah.
Do you think cinema has always been in this state of crisis, or do you think it's worse now?
Yeah, I think it's part of the human condition. I don't think this is a cinema problem. I think this is a cinema goer problem.
Right.
I think it's a consumer problem.
Oh, it was better 20 years ago.
It's always going to be it. We're at an age now where we're shouting at clouds. We're shaking our fists. A football lands in our garden. We're like, do that again. I'm going to tell your mum. Do you know what I mean? It's that we're in that phase now. Right. And I feel like growing up, I've always done this. Beach Boys were my favorite band. And I was always like, God, if I was born a bit earlier, that would have been great. And then Nirvana were my were one of my favorite bands. And I was like, God, if I was born a bit earlier, that would have been great.
Yeah.
And then you start getting into all this stuff and you're
I'd love to be alive before Nirvana killed himself.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? That's it. That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. And it's that kind of shit. And I feel like cinema now, we're like, oh God, I wish I was alive to experience Nightmare on Elm Street for the first time ever.
But we wouldn't have done. We'd have missed it. And then we'd have gone, oh, it's some weird B movie I didn't catch. And then 20 years later, we'd have gone, oh, yeah, it was pretty good, wasn't it?
Oh, it's a cult classic. It's fucking incredible. Yes, I've always loved it, but you've seen it a week ago. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that. I feel like this happens throughout every aspect of life where you continuously feel like it was better a little bit before. And nine times out of 10, it's why you stick around for as long as you did. You know what I mean?
So are we saying that the cure for this kind of cinema is that we need to just have a little bit of fucking willpower and the next time they decide they're going to remake something that we love, not go?
Yeah, I think that would cure it. I think if... Well, I mean, I don't understand how this isn't the cure for it. It's made 5 million in a fucking week.
Well, I think this doesn't have any cultural relevance anymore.
Yeah, of course not!
Like I said, back in 2006, when emo and goth and metal was kind of in a heyday.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I was a Nine Inch Nails fan. Right,
can you imagine this trailer going out on Kerrang? I'd have lost my shit.
Right, Nine Inch Nails had top 5 hits in the early 2000s. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
People were listening to alternative music in large numbers. 15 years later, no one gives a shit. We listen to jazz.
Dude, do you remember Deftones?
Yes.
They're still
going. I'm a huge Deftones fan.
I haven't heard anything they've done in years because I'm like, I really like that one song that I heard on Kerrang when I was 15. Like, that's it. They're a great band. 10, 15 years ago, they were fucking amazing. Now, I'm like, you know what I mean? I might put on a bit of Hey Jude. I might just, you know what I mean? Maybe I'm feeling a little bit of Strawberry Fields Forever today.
You see, I feel personally attacked because I still love Deftones. Even every year, every time they put out an album, I tune in, I love it. I go, yeah, this is great. I look at where it is in the charts. I go, number 60, still relevant. It's not.
No.
It's not. But it's someone looked at that and went, it's about time for a Crow remake. I think it's really going to capture the zeitgeist.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. It's we're all to blame for this. We're all to blame for this because we've done it countless times in the past. And I don't think there's a cure for it. I think we're just
I think there is.
Weird
I think we stopped
stage.
Going. I think we stopped checking.
I don't think that's the cure. I think that kills cinema.
Right, okay.
That's what I mean. I just think it ends. You know what I mean?
Right, okay. Or we start going to stuff that's good, that doesn't have a huge marketing budget, isn't broad. And I think this is the thing that I wanted to get to is There has never been easier access to filmmaking equipment.
Yeah.
And
you
can use
your fucking phone. You have a magic rectangle in your pocket that you can shoot a fucking film on.
Remember when Kevin Smith made Clerks and he had to get 4 credit cards
sell his entire comic book collection. Yeah.
Right. Don't have to do that anymore.
No.
There's no longer that paywall as an entry barrier to making films.
Yeah, yeah.
What there is there's so many films being made.
Yeah.
That trying to find them through the noise and go, oh, this is an excellent little film. Well, that's an excellent little film is next to impossible because there's 700 coming out a week.
And they're all from big studios. They're all with like big fucking things. Right. But and then you've got all of the indie noise in front of it, but it's not shouting loud enough because they don't have the marketing budget.
Right.
Which is
so
upsetting.
So I think it's sifting through that.
Yeah, I would very much like an indie defense wall to just be erected at some point. So I could just go to my local theater, my local chain theater, and go, you know what? I'm gonna watch this fucking $25,000 budget indie film about the inner workings of the hippopotamus. You know what I mean?
Right.
What really makes this one hippo tick?
Or find your local independent cinema where the staff are the ones picking the movies. Because if you go to a Cineworld or a View, right? If you go
to
a Cineworld or a View.
No one goes to View. If you go to Cineworld or
Odeon. I went to View to watch this. It's my nearest.
Stop supporting View. Stop supporting View.
I can't. It's that or it's an hour-long drive. We wouldn't be recording right now.
Drive the hour. Okay. I don't care, Rob. Drive the hour. Stop supporting View. They're fucking terrible. I'll pay for you to get a Cineworld Unlimited card if you drive an hour there and back. I don't care.
By the way, regular viewers may have noticed this this week that we've got some pretty astounding artwork.
We do.
Now, I'm always incredibly proud of the artwork that you put together, Ben.
That's a good save. Thank
but you don't have time every week to hand draw some comic book art.
No, I don't have time any week, Rob. I've never once had time for that. Memento was the last one I did. A Christopher Nolan series last year. Memento, I did a tiny little box drawing. That was it. That's the last.
It was beautiful.
Thanks, man.
It was beautiful.
Thanks.
Someone who does have the time and also the talent and also we just love their stuff is an Instagram account called Illustrational Official. Mm-hmm. They've done the art for us this week. And
dude's fucking insane.
He's incredible. His art is incredible. Every single bit of it I look at, I'm like, oh, I love it. If you like Tales from the Crypt, if you like Silver Age Marvel, if you like just well-drawn, beautiful art, go check out Illustrational Official on Instagram. Not only have they done our artwork this week, but when we kind of got chatting to them, I was like, look, do you want to rewatch the original Crow and let us know what your thoughts are? And they did a little write-up for us.
Fuck off. That's incredible.
Yeah, right.
Has he actually done that? As well as doing the artwork?
Yeah.
Is he coming for my job? Mate, I will fucking fight you in a car park. All right.
Illustrational Official writes, I just rewatched the Crow movie and it was amazing to experience it again. It was a little dated for this time, I think, but I can see now how this was a masterpiece of its time. The dark noir, gritty, action-packed, drama-filled with an awesome story. The performance by the cast is superb, especially the outstanding performance by Brandon Lee, bringing life and depth to an awesome character with his portrayal of some scenes. If I may add, I love the scene where Eric walks through the gang members and sits on the table. The visuals of the dark rain-soaked noir streets are just breathtaking. After re-experiencing this masterpiece of a movie, all I can say for the next movie is it's got some big shoes to fill.
Fuck's sake. Oh my god, that's incredible.
Yeah, they're excited enough to make this vintage horror comic style artwork for the Crow movie and they hope you all like it. I can tell you now, I love it. It's a shame it's for a movie that is so painfully confused and terrible.
Yeah. It's just confused is the right word. I feel like they were trying to hit too many things at once and they didn't commit to one lane and they didn't fully deliver on any front and it's upsetting. I feel like the story was already there. There was a TV show about the Crow and it was essentially just a retelling of the story of the film. But it was good. You know what I mean? It was fine. It was aggressively fine. But it was just more of what we loved.
In our little summer of bizarre remakes and unnecessary sequels, so far, we've had Romulus.
We have.
Which, if it had just stuck to the events of the first film, but updated, which we thought it was going to do.
Yeah, I thought it was going to sort of spur on a little bit. If it bridged the gap between Alien and Aliens, that would have been great.
Right. I'd have been well up for just crew on a ship with a xenomorph.
Yeah.
But they were like, no, let's do something radically different and tie everything together. No,
here's the fourth act. Here's the fifth act. Let's round it out on the seventh act. Right. Fuck off.
And now in our second entry into our summer of bizarre reboots and sequels, they've gone, look at this perfectly fine story. What if we do something radically different?
Yeah. What about if we just take the core elements and none of the subtext or meaning and then just done? You know what I mean? What about that? That's fucking, it's silly. It's silly. Look, I'm not a fan of it. I'm glad, if you're a fan of it, I'm glad you are. I genuinely am. I sincerely am very jealous because I went into this with very low expectations, thinking, hoping that this was going to be the film to turn it around and I would go, it's all right. It's not that bad. It's not great. It's not terrible. But I went in with such low expectations and they didn't get met and it made me angrier somehow. do you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't just upset that my expectations weren't met because I wasn't expecting that. I was upset because I'd lowered them so much actively, avoided every fucking spoiler that was possible, and was still came out like, what? Why? Why? It's just, it's one of those films that just doesn't need to exist. It just doesn't need, there's no point to its existence. It's like an owl.
No.
Why do they exist? Moths. Moths are sexually attracted to fire and made of dust. Their existence makes no fucking sense. But I still support moths more than the Crow remake.
I mean, you nearly said you support owls more, which is...
Yeah, I changed it rapidly because I was like, I'm not going to be able to... I'm not going to be able to round that sentence out and take myself seriously ever again.
You can't catch that check.
No, fuck no.
We're rapidly running out of time. I just wanted to check, do we have time?
Go on.
For comment corner.
We do. Do you mind? I've got something for this. Do you mind if I speed run comment corner this week?
Oh, please do, yeah.
Because I didn't realise that on our Spotify there was like 50 unpublished comments that I've gone through and published them all. Some a while ago. So I'm gonna run through real quick. On the Crow episode, Lindsay Bird, I see Rob's Raven and I raise you an owl. Yes, Ben, I know your weakness. Giant dragonflies too. And she really does. That is two of my enormous weaknesses. So thank you, Lindsay. I see you. I hear you. I feel bullied. And then she puts, love you guys, really. Then I feel less bullied. And then I feel the love. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's one on the Crow episode on Alien Romulus. Broccoli has put, what a lovely almost rant review. I appreciate the tastefully put humor. 5-star. Amazing. Thank you so much. Godzilla minus one. Matt Bolton commented, horse head emoji. Little Shop of Horrors. Sean Weston put, we'll now be using the phrase aggressively fine on the daily. Glad this was my first ever movie ever episode. Fucking well, welcome on board, Sean. I love you dearly. See you soon. On Limelight, Ryan Ramos, 403, put, great episode, guys. Phenomenal Southern accent. Thank you very much. You made Charles Chaplin exciting to watch. See, Rob? Someone did like the Charlie Chaplin series.
Who understands my love for Charlie Chaplin.
No, Rob, there's two, because Isabella commented, mint, on the kid. There you go. There's two. The Monkey Man on Poor Things got me crackling just from the title. Thanks for the good times. Keep up the good work. Love you, buddy.
Aww.
Captain America, Deadhead put, you guys listen to Tool, Slipknot, and Deftones? Oh, regretting my previous conversations now. Okay. Yeah, we love Deftones, mate.
Yeah.
I like you both even more now. Ha! Love you too, Deadhead. John on our Deer Hunter episode. Great episode. Would love to hear you guys discuss the film Come and See.
Maybe
there's many more. Also, I didn't realize how many that more there were, so I'm gonna end it there and we'll do a part two at some point in the future.
Well, no, because I've got some I really need to get off my chest.
Let's go.
So we post to social media quite regularly. We post on many platforms, and sometimes we'll post a clip and it will go popular that week.
Sure.
And other times we'll post a clip and then on a sort of delayed reaction, it will go popular many, many, many weeks later. So About 6 months ago, we covered a movie called Bone Tomahawk.
Yes.
Now,
during the
review of Bone Tomahawk, we talked about Native peoples in America have always traditionally been represented as villains, cannibalistic savage villains, and that if there's going to be a sort of retro Western coming out again, is it necessarily useful for people from that demographic to see it, to see themselves portrayed so brutally again as like truly, truly horrific?
Yeah.
So us asking that question as a reel.
I'm dreading this one already.
That's popped off, right?
Okay.
Someone has just, as we've got some great comments here.
Okay.
This is what happens at less than 200 micrograms of testosterone levels. So the stuff the Trogs did was stuff that the Comanche did, and so now it's not okay. You are being foolish. Right. Imagine even caring.
I mean, sure. Right? Yeah.
Someone's just commented, ha, lames. Right?
Plural.
Someone else has gone, are they vegan feminists too?
Not until very recently. No, well, you were half correct until about 4 or 5 months ago. Yeah.
But then my favorite one.
Go on.
You are the type of guys to drive your wives to their boyfriend's house.
That's fucking incredible.
How good is that? How Mate. Good is that? Ben, we got some announcements about the show because we're about to jump into Fincher.
Hold on. Don't just brush over that. That guy. These people are so upset about being
They're
like...
so you know, upset.
It's 2024. So should we maybe start being a little bit more inclusive? And they're like, fuck you, you soft pricks. I love social media so much. It brings out so all good. The fucking weird worms. You know what I mean?
I feel like that's been a really balanced comment corner this
that's
week.
That's been
right?
great. That's been,
it's
I
been
feel
the light
like,
and the shade.
Yeah,
okay?
Spotify was and, super positive, and then you've just got TikTok being like, fucking dicks.
That was YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
Dude. So,
that was Comment Corner. If you want to be part of next week's Comment Corner, find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We've got
Go
Discord.
Get offended on YouTube because it's fucking hilarious, man. Out
Just
yourself.
Just comment under any video and hey, you know, there's a good chance. There's a good chance it'll make the show. We've got some announcements, Ben, because we're about to cover David Fincher. We're about to cover every David Fincher movie ever.
We are. Are we going to start it again with Alien 3?
We're not. Okay. Alien 3's done. It's in the can.
Thank fuck.
I feel like I said everything I needed to say about that film in that episode. Listen to it.
I can't
it's
watch
a,
it again.
It's a firm favorite of mine. But we did talk about implementing a swear jar for the Fincher series.
Oh, God. Yeah, we did. I forgot about this.
We need to clear up our act, and it's going to start from next week.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
What do you want to do with the swear jar?
I think we should implement like a punishment list. Like if there is a certain amount of swears in an episode, then there are different things that our Discord community can elect one of us to do.
The Discord can decide.
I think this is a Discord moderated swear jar. I feel like if you want to get involved in it, join our Discord now. We'll put some rules in. If we hit a certain amount of swears, Discord get to write a 30-second script that one or both of us have to read out loud on Instagram Live, straight-faced, with no context.
Do you remember last time we did that and we had to give out that reel that was a really positive review of Madam Web and how deep it was?
Yeah, and do you remember that half the people that watched it weren't our listeners and thought we were being serious? Yeah, that was fun. That was a really fun week of comments, that was. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, let's do that. What are you gonna rate The Crow remake 2024, Ben?
Three.
What are the 3 points it gets?
It has some great scenes. The stairwell scene's great. I like the fact that I get to watch a bunch of people I don't like die. That was sort of some sort of cathartic release. And I like the fact that all the CGI birds are actually crows and not fucking ravens.
Okay, fair. Fair. That's fair.
Other than that, the film has nothing else going for it.
Right. And here's the thing. I would agree with you on all those points. Yeah. So I would also give it 3, but I'm subtracting 3.
Yeah, fair.
And here's why. I am really bored of being fed shit and being asked how it tastes.
Yeah, same.
And at a certain point, I feel like if I'm going to watch a thing, I'm going to give it 2.5 hours, 2 hours of my time,
yeah,
and $11.99 at a cinema ticket, a fucking View cinema that I've had to drive to and get lost on the motorway and end up in Chepstow and then have to drive back to the cinema again with very little petrol in the car and get very stressed
for the
Crow remake.
Yeah.
Nah, that's a zero.
Yeah, that's okay, that's zero. Fair. You had a much tougher time than me. I had a great time watching it, you know what I mean? Me and Amber from the Control Alt Critique podcast went and watched it. And we came out with the exact same reactions, like, what? So that was fun. That was really fun. So that was great. Thanks for that, Amber.
We should do something with them
relatively soon.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't want to spoil anything. We've got plans. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. That is all the time we have this week.
We love each and every one of you so much. It is actually unreal. Thank you for the continued support. Thank you for everything you bring to the table. Because honestly, without you, we would just be two mentals sitting in a room yelling about shit that no one cares about. But with you there, we're at least not alone yelling in a room about shit that no one cares about. I don't know how to round that out.
This episode has been produced, as planned, as thought about, as the movie that we have covered.
Yeah.
And it's still a better use of 2 hours of your time to listen to it twice than it is to watch the Crow remake.
Yeah, to be fair. Yeah,
you're not wrong. Ben is now going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of this film. To thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. He's going to give you a little movie-based Monday motivation pep talk while I'm going to do exactly what this film tells you to do and consume.
I feel like this is the last lesson that we need as a society, as a human form, to stop thinking that it was better just 6 months ago, just a year ago, just 5 years ago. Oh, things were so much easier. Things were so much better. It's hard. You can never go back to it. You can never recapture that. You have to move on. We have to move forward individually, collectively, together, as a people, as a society. Let's move on. Support your fucking independence. Support new, exciting stuff. Let's get back to our roots of where people were creative and progressing and fun and full of themselves. And fucking, if you're going to take something away from the Crow remake, fuck rehab is essentially the message of the film. There's nothing else there. I don't know, man. That's the message of the film.
Perfect.
Legend.